Earl Lovelace, The Dragon Can't Dance. Up on the hill, Carnival Monday morning breaks upon the backs of these thin shacks with no cock's crow, and before the mist clears, little boys, costumed in old dresses, their heads tied, holding brooms made from the ribs of coconut palm leaves, blowing whistles and beating kerosene tins for drums, move across the face of the awakening hill, sweeping yards in a ritual heralding the masquerader's coming that goes back centuries for its beginnings. Back across the middle passage, back to Mali and to Guinea and Dahomey and Congo, back to Africa, when maskers were sacred and revered, the keepers of the poisons and heads of secret societies. And such children went before them, clearing the ground, announcing their coming to the huts, before which they would dance and make their terrible cries, affirming for the village, the tribe, warriorhood and femininity, linking the villagers to their ancestors, their gods, remembered even now so long after the crossing, if not in the brain, certainly in the blood. So that every Carnival Monday morning, Aldrich Prospect, with only the memory burning in his blood, a memory that had endured the 300-odd years to Calvary Hill, felt, as he put on his dragon costume, a sense of entering a sacred mask that invested him with an ancestral authority to uphold before the people of this hill, this tribe marooned so far from the homeland that never was their home, the warriorhood that had not died in them, their humanness that was determined not by their possession of things. He had a desire, a mission, to let them see their beauty, to uphold the unending rebellion they waged, huddled here on this stone and dirt hill, hanging over the city, like the open claws on a dragon's hand, threatening destruction if they were not recognised as human beings. But this carnival, putting on his costume now at dawn, Aldrich had a feeling of being the last one, the last symbol of rebellion and threat to confront Port of Spain. Fisheye was under orders not to misbehave. Philo had given up on his own calypsos of rebellion to sing now about the Axeman. Once upon a time, the entire carnival was expressions of rebellion. Once there were stick fighters who assembled each year to keep alive in battles between themselves the practice of a warriorhood born in them. And there were devils, black men who blackened themselves further with black grease to make of their very blackness a menace, a threat. They moved along the streets with horns on their heads and tridents in hand. They threatened to press their blackened selves against the well-dressed spectators unless they were given money. And there were the jab-jabs, men in jester costumes, their caps and shoes filled with tinkling bells, cracking long whips in the streets, with which they lashed each other with full force, proclaiming in this display that they could receive the hardest blows without flinching at its coming, without feeling what, at its landing, must have been burning pain. Suddenly they were all gone, outlawed from the city, or just died, gone. And he felt alone. The dragon alone was left to carry the message. He felt that now, alone, with even Philo and Fisheye gone, it was too great to carry. It would be lost now among the clowns, among the fancy robbers and the fantasy presentations that were steadily entering carnival, drowned amidst the satin and silks and the beads and feathers and rhinestones. But bothering him even more than this was the thought that maybe he didn't believe in the dragon anymore.